Okay, we're beginning here on the last two lines on the bottom of Yud Aleph Amud Bet. Tana Rabbanan, Kansa Rishon Lishum Nisuin. The first individual married her and had Erusin with her, and then went to Nisuin. Ve'yesh La'edim Shelo Nistera. Despite the fact that she married this individual and reached the point of Nisuin, she has witnesses to the fact that she was never secluded alone with that first husband. He passed away before they were able to consummate the marriage. Inami Nistera. Or, we know that she was secluded with her husband, velo shata kedei biyah, but that seclusion wasn't sufficient time in order for them to have biyah. Eina sheni yachol liton tanat bitulin. The second individual who marries her does not have any claim against her of bitulim, sheri kansa rishon, because she already was married once. The default status of a woman who is already married is the fact that she is a bi'ula. Therefore, when he takes her in, he has to assume that she is a bi'ula. And he can't come now and make a taina. Oh, she said she was a bitula. We have edim saying that she was a bitula. We don't say that. So Amar Rabba, Rabba says or concludes from what we just saw in the Braita, Zoto Merit. From this you can conclude, Kansa b'chazkat bitula. If he marries a woman with the assumption or under the impression that she is a bitula, b'nim tzeit bitula, and afterwards figures out that she's not a bitula, but rather a bitula, yesh lak tuba manet. Then she gets at least the minimum amount of a manet. She does not lose her ktubah entirely. It's not called a mekach ta'ut over here. From here, Tosafot proves that the memra here said by Rabba, not Rava, because Rava before said that whenever it says mekach ta'ut like this, it means nothing. So according to Rava, this woman gets nothing because there was a deception in the marriage, and therefore the whole erusin falls apart. On the other hand, Rabba is saying here that despite the fact that he was duped, and believe that this woman was a bitula. Nevertheless, when she is a bitula, she only loses her ketubah, the maneh that belongs to a bitula, but she does not lose her ketubah entirely. Rav Ashi Amar Bi'alma Le'olam Emelecha Le'lakalal. Let me say in general that she has no ketubah whatsoever. V'shani Hachon, over here it's different. Sherei Kansa Rishon. Over here, it's different because there was another party involved. There was a previous marriage. And based on that, we can say here, he doesn't have a claim because what would have happened prior to this point in time. And even though we have a deem over here telling him that she's a bitula, as Tosafot points out, what he should have assumed is the edim are coming to be mishabeach, coming to praise this woman and make her sound like she's great and she's a bitula. Meantime, she really is a bi'ula, and he should have been choshesh. He should have some suspicions about this because she was married previously. Now, all the Rishonim over here ask, Rashi, Tosafot, many of the other Rishonim, what is Rabba's taina over here? Ravashi is basically quoting him the Braita. The Braita says, you know why the reason there is no Tanat bitulim over here is b'sharei kansa rishon. What Ravashi says is explicit in the Braita. How did Rabba come up with a different conclusion here, which is this should have a generic implication, which is that any time there's deception between bitula and bi'ula, that there's only a loss of 100 maneh, but the remaining ketubah is in place. That's not what this braita says. This braita says, sheri kansa rishon. So Tosafot brings from the Rivam that one has to explain this language of sheri kansa rishon differently than we thought before. If you look in the Tosafot, kansa b'chazkat bitula v'nimtzeit bula yesh la maneh, v'hadak tani, what about the fact that the braita says sheri kansa rishon? Perish Rivam, the hachi mashmalei, ein l'sheni tanat bitulim l'chasra miktubata klum. This second individual has no right to diminish her claim of a maneh from the ketubah. Sheri kansa rishon, v'garam liot ketubata maneh. Because she was already married, that's what triggered her ketubah to be a maneh. V'ein yochol la'asra klum me'oto maneh. He cannot take down any amount from that. V'lo mahanya tainat bitulim elam maneh de bitulim. Tainat bitulim only helps to reduce it from 200 to 100, but not less. So the Rivam reinterprets the language of Sheri kansa rishon basically to become synonymous with what Rabba is saying, which is that if she goes into a marriage believing that she's a bitula, and then we find out that she's a bi'ula, the Hasharei Karansa Rishon is telling us that the Tanav bitula is only shayach, only relevant to 100 maneh or half the ketubah. The remainder of the ketubah stands whether or not she is a bitula. So that's the way that Tosafot explains it. The Ramban, on the other hand, says that the Braita is actually teaching us a chiddush, that despite the fact that there were edim there that said that she was a bitula, still, in this case, he has no tanat bitulim because, like the Tosafot said, we'll just assume that the edim came to be mishabeach her, but they weren't really necessarily saying that she was a bitula. They didn't know for certain. And since he didn't add any other additional monies into the ketubah because she was a betula, he just gave her the basic ketubah, which was the 200 maneh. So despite the fact that he wrote a ketubah of a betula, supposedly relying on these edim, nevertheless, we still say in that case that she's still entitled to a maneh. So that's the chiddush of the Ramban. Now the Gemara continues and says, V'nechu shema tachtav zinta. Let us ask the question, maybe she had znut under her husband. Meaning that, who says over here the reason that she's a bi'ula now is because of her previous husband or something happened prior to that point in time? Maybe what happened is they had erusin with this woman, and now she had znut while she was in erusin with the second husband. None of this will be clarified. So now Rashi says over here, the shitato, Rashi says, why do we want everybody to come to Beit Din? Because when we come to Beit Din, things get clarified. So over here, if we don't make her come to Beit Din and we just give her the maneh, then what's going to happen here is they're never going to show up in Beit Din and we'll never get any clarification as to whether there was nut in this case or not. And that's what Rashi says. Bishlama hanachta el daman kansa b'chazkat betula and mitzayt bula yishlak tuba lo makshinan. All the previous cases, we didn't ask a question because the igala meimer kishabala Beit Din. Then they'll come to Beit Din ubawi dim shizinta kolam again. Because all these previous cases were adjudicated in Beit Din. And therefore, when they come to Beit Din, we'll get clarification of whether there was nut or not. Av hachak tani ein yachol liton. That he has no claim of Tanat Bitulim. That means that he's not going to come to Beit Din because he knows he has no claim whatsoever. If he doesn't show up in Beit Din, we'll never get any clarification as to how this happened. So that's the question according to Rashi. Tosafot asks a much more basic or fundamental question that's asked by many of the Rishonim is that we're talking about a Sfeik Sfeik over here. There's a Sfeik whether Tachtav and Shelo Tachtav. And I didn't feel it was Tachtav. It could have been Be'ones. If that's the case, then there's a Sfeik Sfeika, and there's no way she would lose her ketubah for a Sfeik Sfeika. So what's the question of Nechu Shema Tachtav Zinta? What question do we have over here? We're dealing with a Sfeik Sfeika, and a Sfeik Sfeika is not strong enough in order to make her Asura Labal, or to be Mafsid her ketubah. So Tosafot gives one of two answers. One answer is the possibility that she's married to a Kohen over here. And since she's married to a Kohen, then there's only one Sfeik here, not a Sfeik Sfeika. And there's a reason to worry about the fact that Shema Zinta, that's enough of a Safek now, with a single Safek, to say to us, wait, we better look into this matter because there's one Safek. Now, that's only true by Kohen, but Tosafot the Shitato, both at the beginning of the Masechta and in other places, notes that we're goes there by Eshet Yisrael because of the Kohen, that we will force everybody to go through this or worry about this issue to protect against there being an Isur by the Eshet Kohen. The other answer that Tosafot gives is, near the read to the Rav Ashi parich. This question is only on Rav Ashi shita, not in general a question. Came into Ba'alma itla de in laklum, because in general Rav Ashi believes that in a case of a bitula that is found to be a bi'ula, she gets zero, and it's only in this unique case because of kansa rishon that she gets to keep part of the ketubah. Ba'acha yeshla the fisha kansa rishon im ken yavoli de isur. That's going to cause problems because what's the husband going to think? In every other scenario, the woman gets nothing. So over there, he's going to be choshesh for Isur. He's going to say this woman is problematic. Maybe Shem Zinta. But in this case, where the Chachamim granted her a maneh, that makes it sound like she's fine. She just gets downgraded from Betula to Be'ula, but we don't worry about Isur at all. And therefore, he's never going to show up in Beit Din, and there's never going to be any clarification of the issue. But it's not true. The truth is that the same Safek exists over here, even though over here she's entitled to maneh because of Kansa Rishon, and he should have suspected that. But the differential between the two cases is going to cause him to come to the wrong conclusion, and that's what it means here. Nicho shemes dachtav zinta. So Rav Shravio solves the problem. The second husband had kiddushin and had bi'ah immediately. There was no interim stage between kiddushin and the bi'ah, similar to our practice today where we have the kiddushin and the nisuin back to back. And therefore, there's really no issue, or the reason we do this is so there won't be any issue of between the period of time of erusin until the time of the bia of the first husband. Some people have this whole conversation in reference to our Mishnah, not to the Braita that we brought over here. Bitula, almana, grusha, chalutza, mine nisuin, dubatan mane. They get 100 zuz. Ve'en tanat bitulin. They don't have any claim. The husband that marries them afterwards has no tanat bitulin. Bitula, mine nisuin, hechemishkachada. Over here, the Mishnah indicates that there's a bitula, but she was married. How do you have a case of bitula if she was already married? The case where she went into the chupa, but there was no bi'ah. Amarabo zot omeret. From here, you would conclude, Because over here, she supposedly is a bitula because she never had bi'ah with the previous husband. Nevertheless, he has bi'ah with her, and now he finds out she's a bi'ula, and she's still entitled to a manet. Ravashi Amar, lo lo meimelecha ba'alma le'laklal. No, in general, the principle is she gets nothing in that case of deception. V'shani hocha shari nichnasa l'chupa. Because already she was previously married, and because of that, the husband has no claim anymore because of that previous marriage. Belecho shema tachtav zinta, the same question we had before. Why don't we worry about the possibility that she had znut under him? Why are we just assuming that it all took place beforehand? Amarav sharavio, kigon, shikideshu bali altar. It's a case where they had kiddushin and bi'ah immediately, so there was no question of an extramarital affair with the second husband when she had a rusin with him. Man, the matnila braito, the one who writes this whole conversation in reference to the braita, kol shekena matnitin, certainly would write it with regards to our Mishnah. The one who writes about the Mishnah, avala braita lo, but they would not write it about the braita, mishum de matzi amarla, ana edim samche, because there's a very clear distinction between the cases over here. In the case of our Mishnah, and the explanation that we gave there, case was that she had nisuin and she was a bitula. But we have no evidence or outside verification of the fact that she wasn't a bitula. There were no edim in the Mishnah. In the braita, it brings a case where there's a possibility that there were edim that say that she never had bi'ah, or she was lo nistara kedei bi'ah. So in that case, we have outside verification the fact that she's a bitula. So in the case of our Mishnah, if you make the claim, like Rabbah says, that the conclusion from our Mishnah is zoto merit, that a bitula that is found to be a bula gets a maneh, and Ravashi comes and says, no, that's not the case, because this might be unique to the Mishnah, he might agree to Rabbah's statement by the Braita, or likely will agree to Rabbah's statement by the Braita. Because in the case of the Braita, you have a deem that says she's a bitula, and despite that fact, she still gets a manet. That's more similar to a normal case where the woman says she's a bitula, and we find out she's a bi'ula. So maybe there, Ravashi would have to say that Rabbah is correct by the Braita. So on the Mishnah, he says, you know what, Rabbah, maybe it's a different din, because over there, it's her word or the thought that she was a bitula, and we find out she's a bi'ula, but there's no outside verification of her being a bitula. But in the Braita, where there's outside verification, and yet the Braita still says she gets a maneh, over there we could extrapolate that Rabbah says to all cases, and Ravashi would agree. On the other hand, if you say it by the Braita, you certainly are going to say it by the Mishnah, because in the Braita, in the face of Edim, Ravashi comes along and says that Rabbah is wrong, and this is unique to the Braita, and we cannot extrapolate it to other cases of Bitula, finding out that she's a Bitula. Then certainly in our Mishnah, he's going to say that, because in our Mishnah, there's no Edim, there's no outside verification. So certainly over there, he will say that Rabbah's conclusion to extrapolate this din more broadly is incorrect. And therefore, the one who assigns this conversation to the Braita will assign it also to the Mishnah. The one who assigns it to the Mishnah may not say the same thing by the Braita, because by the Braita, there's more evidence to Rabbah's position, because there we have Edim. Okay, next Mishnah. Ha'uchel etel chamiv bi'udah. Person who goes to eat a meal by his father-in-law in Yehuda, shelo be'edim, without witnesses, eni yochol leton to tanat bitulim. He no longer has a right to make a claim against his wife of tanat bitulim, mipnei shemit yached ima. Because the practice in Yehuda was to allow the husband and wife, who had erusin now, prior to nisuim, to have yichud together. Now, why they allowed this to happen, Rashi every time notes, sheyeh libo gasba, that they should have a certain amount of familiarity between them that would make or ease the night of the Nisuin together. And that's why they allowed for the Yichud. Others claim that the reason that they allowed for this Yichud, based on the Yerushalmi, is because of the Gzeira of Baal Hegmon Tchila. Then anytime a Betula got married, she had to go to the Hegmon first. So they, number one, wanted to avoid the problem of it being Beratzon, that this woman does willingly goes to the Hegmon. So what they did was created a certain amount of bond or physical bond between her and her husband, so that if she was taken by the Hegmon, she clearly was Ne'anas. Or that when the Hegmon was Bo'el, the woman, and realized that she wasn't a Bitula anymore, he'd get rid of the Gezerah because he wasn't benefiting anymore, because these women were not Bitulot. So therefore, they instituted this Yichud that was in Yehuda. Seemingly, based on the Mishnah here, there was a meal associated with this, a celebratory meal, that was associated with this yichud that they had prior to that time. And it seems that this practice, Yehuda, persisted even after the gzeirah of the Hegmon disappeared. Now, Miktane Ochel, sounds over here that in a place where they go to eat by their father-in-law's house, Michlal de'ika dochta b'Yehuda nami de'lo achil, makes it sound like in Yehuda, there's not one minhag. And there are different places within Yehuda. So, Amar Abayish, Mamina b'Yehuda nami mekomot yesh. Even within Yehuda, the minhag is not standardized. So you can't say that everybody in Yehuda does not have a tanat bitulin. It's only in places where they allow the chatan and kala to be mityached before nisuin. In that place, they don't have a tanat bitulim. But when that practice wasn't found in Yehuda, they would still have a tanat bitulim. So Kedetanya, and we'll show you that there were different practices within Yehuda. Because Amar Rabbi Yehuda, B'Yehuda b'rishona hayu michadim et ha-chatan ve'et ha-chala sha'achat godem k'nisatan l'chupa, k'dei she'e libo gaspa. The practice in Yehuda in the beginning was that they allowed the chatan and kala to be b'yuchud an hour or some short time before the chupa, before the nisuin, in order that they should have some amount of familiarity with each other. Uvi Galil, lo ayu asuin came. In the Galil, they did not do this, or they did not have this practice. Biyuda berishana hayu mamidim lahem shnei shushbinim, echad lo ve'echad la, one for him, one for her, kdei lemashmesh et hachatan ve'et hachala, b'shat kinsatan l'chupa. In Yehuda, in the beginning, when they got married, they used to appoint two people, one on behalf of the chatan and one on behalf of the kala. They used to have these individuals available around them to check when they used to go into the chupa, meaning that when they used to have the yichud and the biyah rishona, they used to ensure that nothing was done to deceive one of the two parties, to make sure that the chatan didn't throw out the dam bitulim, and from the kala's perspective, for the husband, that protect her against her bringing outside dam in and claiming that it was dam bitulim. Ubi galil, lo hayu osin kein. And in the galil, they did not have this practice. Now, why they didn't have this practice in the Galil is a little unclear. It seems that in the Galil, they also had shushbinin. They also had a best man and a best woman for the chatan and kala. And so, therefore, what is the practice that was different in the Galil? So you could claim that they just didn't check. They were there to serve as the chatan and kala, but they didn't check. Some of the Rishonim say that in the Galil, they had shushbinim, but the shushbinim only used to check the kala and not the chatan. Because in terms of the claims over here, the one that really there's suspicion about is the kala bringing in extra items from the outside. As far as the chatan is concerned, throwing out the dam betulim afterwards is a much more far-fetched claim because he doesn't have the prior information that a woman might have that she isn't a betula. So, b'Yehuda b'Rishona yu shushbinim yishenim b'bayit shechatan v'kala yishenim ba. In the beginning, in Yehuda, the shushbinim used to sleep in the house that the chatan and kala were in order to do this check. B'Galil, lo ayu asin kein. And in Galil, there wasn't such a practice. Now, before we move on to the next part of the Braita, it's clear here that the Minhag in Yehuda was varied. Because in the first case, it says that they allow them to be mityached. Then we have a second piece in Yehuda, which says that they have shushbinin to make sure that they have tanat bitulin. But you know already, if they were mityached, there is no tanat bitulin. And what's the whole point of having these shushbinin to take care of them? So it's clear there were varied practices in Yehuda. And some practices allowed for Yichud. In those cases, there was no Tanat Bitulim. In other places, they didn't have that practice. Therefore, there was Tanat Bitulim. And they needed the Shushpinim to ensure that the Tanat Bitulim were verifiable. And now, back in the Braita, the final piece of the Braita says, V'chol shelo nahag min hagazeh, anybody who doesn't do this practice, eino yachol dinton Tanat Bitulim. He has no right to make a claim of Tanat Bitulim. Ahai. On what part of the Braita does this go, this last line of the Braita that says, if you don't do this, you have no Tanat Bitulim? Ilema Reisha, if it's going on the first case, which is the Minag in Yehuda, versus the Minag in the Galil, well, in the Minag in Yehuda, it says they were Mityached. So, Koshe Nahagmi Ba'ile, it's not the one who isn't Noheg, it's the one who is Noheg. Anybody who's Noheg, like they were in Yehuda, certainly can't make a claim of Bitulim. But the Braita at the end says, Koshe Lo Nahag, whoever didn't do this. So here, lo nahag is not the proper lashon to reflect what was the first case in the Braita. The first case in the Braita talks about a problematic situation which takes away the tanat bitulim, which was the yichud. So then it should be kosher nahag. Whoever did this loses that tana. Shouldn't say kosher lo nahag. Ela seifa. What are you going to say? It's on the latter half? Kosher lo mushmash mi ba'ile. The question in the seifa is not kosher lo nahag didn't keep this minhag. The minhag is not the real issue here. The issue is kosher lo mushmash. Again, the only one or the person who really has to make sure that things are good is not the chatan himself. The problem here is not the chatan. The chatan comes and says he's the one who's going to make the tanat bitulim. The one who needs to check that he didn't do anything to deceive is the avia kala, the father of the kala, to make sure that nothing was thrown out or none of the evidence was thrown out. So it's not koshal no hanahag, it's koshal mushmash. Whoever wasn't checked. Whoever wasn't checked can't make a tanat bitulim, because then we have a fear that he did something to deceive the people over here. So it should say koshlo mushmash, because it's coming from an outside party to him. If he wasn't checked, then he can't make the Tanat Bitulim. But it's not up to him, because he's not the one who's doing the checking over here. He's the one who's making the claim that there was a no Bitulim, but the outside party, the father of the Kala, is the one who has to ensure that he was checked in order to allow for there to be Tanat Bitulim. So now, how do we answer this last line in the Braita as to what part it references? Amar Abaye Lola Maresha. It's going on that first case. Mitznei Koshinahag. Just change the reading of the Braita to say Koshinahag. Instead of calling Shalonahag, Koshinahag would not have Tanat Bitulim. Amalei Rava Vaha Koshalon Nahag Tani. Rava says, what are you talking about? That's not what the Braita says. The Braita says Koshalon Nahag. Elam Rava Chikamar Koshalon Nahag Minhag Galil Bigalil Ela Minhag Yuda Bigalil Eni Yochol Dinton Tanat Bitulin. You have to reread it like this. Anybody who did not practice the Minhag of the Galil in the Galil, meaning the default practice in the Galil was no Yichud. So anybody who didn't practice like the normal practice of the Galil, but rather practice like Yehuda in the Galil, then he has no Tanat Bitulim. So that's the way Rava reads it. Ravashi is the third option of how to read this. Amar the Olam HaSeifa. It's going in the latter part of the Mishnah about the Shushbinin. Vutnei Kol Shalom Mushmash. And change it to read, instead of Kol Shalom Nahag, Kol Shalom Mushmash, to make it the Lashon that would work out, that says anybody who didn't have these checks in place no longer has a right to make the Tanat Bitulin. Now, the Rivam, if you remember back on Tosafot on Yud Amud Aleph, says that this Ravashi argues on Rav Nachman's statement that Ketubah is midrabanan. Rav Ashi over here is obviously saying that that's not the case, that Ketubah is midoraita, because he says over here, kol shalom mushmash, that you need to have checks in place in order to make a tanat bitulim. Whereas Rav Nachman over there said, heim heim minu, it's a Ketubah midrabanan, and therefore he's believed to make the claim of peta patuach, tanat bitulim. All those claims are in his favor because the Chachamim were gozer. And Rav Ashi really argues on that underlying premise of Rav Nachman that an adam toreach besuda o mafsida, that a person does not invest in a wedding to lose it. And Rav Ashi is clearly saying that that's not the case. That over here a person will make a claim of Tanat Bitulim, and that Tanat Bitulim is only good because of the Mushmash, not because of that Chazakah that Rav Nachman raised on Daf Yud. Rav Ashi over here says no, that the Tana of Tanat Bitulim is not sufficient unless he has Mushmash. Unless there are these other pieces of evidence in place that make sure that his Tana is a Tanat Bari and a clear Tana. Based on that, the Rivam says Rav Ashi disagrees with Rav Nachman, and he says that's how we know that Ketubah is Doraita, because Rav Ashi is a Batra, he's later than Rav Nachman, and he paskins, or seemingly paskins, that Ketubah is Doraita. He disagrees with Rav Nachman's position, and that's why we say in our Ketubot that it's Doraita, because in Ochanami, our Ketubot are Doraita. And that was the Rivam's solution to the problem over there of why our Ketubot say Doraita in them, if similarly the Gemara says that Ketubah is midrabanan. He says that's what the sugi over there it sounds like, because that's Rav Nachman, but Rav Ashi over here, who's a Batra, argues on Rav Nachman's premise over there. And therefore, Ketubah is really midoraita, and we paskin like Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. Alright, achat almanat Yisrael, vachat almanat Kohen. Doesn't matter if she's a widow from an Yisrael, or a widow from a Kohen, Ketubah tamaneh. Her Ketubah is 100 zuz. Beitin shel Kohanim. Ayu govim levitula arba meot zuz. Beit Din Kohanim used to, for a bat kohen, used to assign her a ketubah of 400 zuz. Velo michu bi adam chachamim. And the chachamim did not stop them. Or in essence, they condoned the behavior of these batei dinim shel kohanim. So the kohanim had a practice to give the betulot that were from the kohanim's families more money in their ketubah based on the fact that these women were of a higher standing or a higher yichus because they were kohanim. Now, as Tosafot points out, they didn't just add this into Tosefet. They didn't just add this in and say, oh, we add on an extra 200 zuz. They put this into the Kor Ketubah. And by putting it into the Kor Ketubah, now, if the Chachamim do not approve of it, then the Ketubah, in a sense, is pasul, or they don't have to pay it because they invented something. But here, the Chachamim condoned that behavior and said it's good, and therefore they put that 400 zuz as the core part of the Ketubah. Tana, v'amanat kohanim ketubata matayim. But we have another braita, which seemingly says that the ketubat almanat kohen is 200 zuz. Just like the betula is double what a regular bat Yisrael is, 400 versus 200. So too, the almanat kohen was 200 versus 100. Vanan tanan, what about our Mishnah? Achat almanat Yisrael, achat almanat kohenim, ketubatan maneh. Our Mishnah says that it's only 100 zuz for almanat kohen. Amar Rav Ashi, shtei takanot havu. There were actually two takanot. Now, they're really not two takanot, but there were two things that were done in order to help out the almanot. And that is Mikara originally takinu lebetula arba meot zuz. In the beginning, they established 400 zuz for a betula bat kohen. Ulamana manet. And a bat kohen who was widowed, she would only get a manet. Kevin de chazul de mizalzulu behu, since they saw that the individuals being mizalzel in the amanot, Rashi claims here that the zilzul was that they used to divorce them willy-nilly, that they didn't care about the women because it was cheap, it was only 100 zuz, so they used to divorce them. It wasn't enough of an impediment to stop divorce. As Rashi says, vafel pish almanat Yisrael nami tubatan maneh. So why is it any different than an almanat Yisrael, which is 100 zuz also? So why should it be any different here? Mihu, kohanim chashivei tvei, they're of a higher standing or stature, v'gnai lahem gerushei benuteihem yoter Yisrael. And the divorce of their daughters was much more impactful than that of Israel, and therefore they were worried about the fact that it was too easy to divorce these women. So Rashi says the problem was that the zilzul was that they were divorcing the women too easily. So then they increased the ktubah to 200 for the almanah of a bat kohen. Since they saw that they were separating, now the almanot were too expensive, meaning that there was too much money to pay for an almanah, and they stopped marrying them whatsoever. Because an almanat kohen was 200 zuz, a betulat Yisrael was 200 zuz, they said we may as well get a betulat Yisrael for 200 zuz instead of getting an almanat kohen. So adrinu l'mita miltayu, they took it back, they retracted this additional takana, and they put it back to the original, which was 400 for a betulah, 100 for an almanat of the kohen. Tosafot, on the other hand, reads the question here differently, and says that even though Rashi's explanation makes sense, it doesn't read so well into the flow of the Gemara. And so therefore he says, what is Kevin de Chazu de Mezalzelei Behu? Mezalzelei Behu was because of the net differential. Because now Betulah was given 400 zuz, and the Almanah was given 100 zuz, they would not marry the Almanot. They would say, look at the relative value of a Betulah versus an Almanah. And therefore they were dissuaded from marrying the Almanot because we did not assign a value to them of a 200 zuz, which would be half of betulah, but rather a quarter of a betulah's ketubah, and that kept the people at bay. They didn't want to marry the almanot because it seemingly put, and in terms of price tag, made the almanot worth so much less that it didn't seem that it was worth marrying such a woman. So then they went ahead and metake, and that'd be 200 zuz, so it'd be the same ratio of 2 to 1 by kohanim like it is by a bat Yisrael. But then they saw that the almanot bat kohen was too expensive. Like Rashi says, it was just better to marry a betulat Yisrael versus the 200 zuz for an almanat kohen, and therefore they pulled that gezerah or takana and put it back to the original takana, that it be 100 zuz. So originally, when they were mezalzel, mezalzel means that they stopped marrying the women. According to Rashi, it means mezalzel, they used to throw them out easily, they used to divorce them easily. Tosfot, on the other hand, says no, they used to stop marrying, they weren't marrying them because of the relative differential in price, but at least they were still marrying them sometimes. Once they were metakein that it was 200 zuz, they didn't marry them at all. And so because of that, Tosfot says that they took it back to the original takana, which was better than the case when it was 200 zuz and nobody was marrying them at all. Beit din shel kohanim v'chulei. Am Rav Yehuda mar Shmuel lo beit din shel kohanim bilvad amru ela afilo mishpachot amyuchasot b'Yisrael. That this din of the extra money for the betulot was not unique to the kohanim, but was true for any of the mishpachot that had yichus that was special or unique or had a certain standing for whatever reason. They also took extra money in their ketubah. Imratzo lasot kederach shakonim osim. If they so choose to practice like the kohanim do, osim, they have the right to do this. Now this right comes in two forms. One is that they're able to put it in the ikar ketubah, not as a tosefet. And number two is, even if there is no ketubah, if it is the minhag of makom or the minhag of that family, it's automatically a part of the tnai beit din that that woman is entitled to that amount, even if it's not written in the ketubah. Meitevei harutzei lasot kederach shakohanim osim kagon bat Yisrael de kohen ubat kohen liYisrael osim. Anybody who wants to mimic this practice of the kohanim, for instance, where you have a mixed marriage, a marriage of a kohen and a Yisrael, whether it's a bat Yisrael to a kohen or a bat kohen to Yisrael, they're allowed to do this practice like the kohanim. Bat Yisrael de kohen ubat kohen liYisrael hu de ikatzad kuhuna. Seemingly, from the Braita, it sounds like the only time you can continue this practice is if at least there's one side of kihuna here, whether it's a bat kohen or a kohen. At least one of the parties is a kohen, and that's why they can extend the practice to these families. Of a bat Yisrael to Yisrael, if it was just a pure bat Yisrael to Yisrael, lo, it sounds like that would not be allowed. When it says, lo mi boy yikamar, it's a lo mi boy bat Yisrael to Yisrael, not only in the case of a bat Yisrael to Yisrael, to lo matzi amar la. Because the husband can't say to the wife, Aluye kamalinan laich, I am elevating your status now because they're both Israelim, so he's not doing anything to elevate the woman's status. So over there, he has no right to claim that she's not entitled to the extra ketubah. Aval bat Yisrael the Kohen, in a case where a bat Yisrael marries a Kohen, the matzi amrla aluyei kam alinan laich, that I am elevating your status. Before, you weren't able to eat truma. Now that you're married to me, you're able to eat truma, you get the status of a Kohen, your children are going to be Kohanim. So because of that, maybe he could say to her, no extra ketubah for you, because I'm the one bringing everything to the party. Emelo, so we would say no there, kamash malan, that it doesn't make a difference. Now the truth is, it can work in both ways. You could argue that from the other side, that a bat Kohen Israel also should maybe be a case where you would think she's not entitled to the extra money of the ketubah because she's not marrying a Kohen. She's actually taking herself outside the shevet of the Kohen, and we want to penalize her. So maybe over there you would think also she should not be entitled to the extra ketubah. Kamash v'lan, that she is entitled to that extra ketubah despite the fact that she is a bat Kohen marrying to Israel and she will no longer be a Kohen. And the truth is, you could have said just the opposite. The fact that this bat Israel is becoming the wife of a Kohen and elevating to the family of a Kohen, she should be entitled to the ketubah of a Kohen, versus the other way around, where it's a bad Kohen marrying Yisrael, where she's going to lose her status as a Kohuna, she should not be entitled to it. So either way, you can see that there's a chiddush here in saying that these parties still continue to get the extra ketubah over here, and the same would be true by Yisrael and a bat Yisrael. Any families that have this practice, or have this minhag, or these cities that have this minhag, that minhag can continue because we endorse such a practice, despite the fact that it might have caused kin'ah, some sort of jealousy between parties that some get this and some get that. Nevertheless, the Chachamim condoned the practice and they said that it doesn't generate that type of kin'ah or jealousy, even if it doesn't have a tzad kuhuna, because you might have had a havamin, if it at least it had tzad kuhuna in it there, that would avoid these problems of jealousy because they would say it was unique to the Kohanim. But now when you open up the possibility that it can go to all parties, not just the Kohanim, but even the Israelim, maybe there would be a problem, kina. Nevertheless, kamash malon, that in any of these instances, we allow for such a distinction to be made in the ketubah. The next Mishnah, anoset aisha v'lo matzala bitulim. He marries a woman, and she finds that she's not a bitula. He omer et, mi she'erastani ne'anasti. When we had our erusin, I was a bitula. But after I became an arusa ne'anasti, I was raped. And it's his loss. It's his bad luck. It was under his auspices. It was his mazel that brought to this. And therefore, it's his loss here. That it happened prior to our erusin. And my transaction here, my marrying of this woman, is a complete mistake. There were misrepresentations over here. So Rabban Gamliel, Rabbi Eliezer, Omrim, Nemenet. She is believed over here. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Lo mipia anu chayin. We don't live by her word, meaning that she can't tell us, or she can't be the one to be the verifier of what happened over here. We have the evidence in front of us is that everybody agrees she's a bi'ula. And we'll assume it happened before he was seen. And she deceived him until she brings evidence to the contrary. Meaning that what everybody agrees about here is she's a bi'ula. So then the burden of proof is really on her. On her to show that the bi'ilah happened after the erusin and not before the erusin. Whereas Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Lezer believe that she is relied upon in this situation. We'll see, because they've either a chazak or an amigo. Itmar, we have a case. Mane li biyadecha. I have 100 zuz that you owe me because I lent you the money. Bala omer in a yudea. The other party says, I don't know. And when he says, I don't know, it doesn't mean that he says, I don't know whether I owe you the money or not, because in that case, he's definitely chayav. The question here is that I don't know if you ever lent me the money. That's what the I don't know is over here. Rav Yehuda, Rav Huna, Amrei, Chayav. Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna believe that he has to pay the money here. Rav Nachman, Rabbi Yochanan, Amrei, Patur. Rav Nachman and Rabbi Yochanan say Patur. It's just interesting to note over here that Rav Nachman is stated here before Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, who is a much greater Amora, and it comes before in the Shoshelet HaDorot. Rav Nachman is a Talmud of Shmuel, and Rabbi Yochanan is, we'll call him a peer or slightly younger than Shmuel, and yet Rav Nachman's name is mentioned first, in all likelihood because we're in the Talmud Bavli, and therefore the Gemara was more familiar with the sheet of Rav Nachman than it was of Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan's name was appended later. Or you could argue that the Gemara later on is going to bifurcate the din here between Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Nachman, and say that Rav Nachman has a specific view here that's differentiated from Rabbi Yochanan, and maybe that's why they mentioned his name first. Now Rav Huna, Rabbi Yudam Rei Chayav, why do they say Chayav here? Bari v'shema. The person who's going to make the claim that he's owed money, that he's a creditor, says a definitive claim. You owe me money. I lent you money. Vishema. The other party says, I don't know. So he only has a claim back of maybe. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. Bari adif. In those cases, we give precedence to the claimant that says something that's definitive. And that's why he's chayav. Rav Nachman, Rav Yochanan, Amrei Patur, Uki Mamona Bechezgat Marei. The money currently it resides with the debtor, or the supposed debtor over here. And Amotzi Mechavero Alav Araya, you want to move that money, you want to change the chazak of that money, you've got a big proof. The burden of proof is on you. Bari is not going to be enough to do that. Amalei Abai, the Rav Yosef, Had Rav Huna, Rav Yehuda, this din, or this psak of Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda, that the chayav over here, is the Shmuelhi. That is a din that they derived from a statement of Shmuel. Titnan, Haitam Uberet, Vamrula, Mativo, Shel, Uberze, upcoming Mishnah on tomorrow's daf, which says that a woman is found to be pregnant, and they ask her, who impregnated you? Who's the father of this child? She says, Mishploni v'Koenu. She's from so-and-so, and he's a Kohen. Not necessarily a Kohen, but he's Miuchas. It's not a Pasul. This baby's fine. Rabban Gamlio, Rabbi Leazo, Mrim Ne'emenet. She's believed. Va'amar Rabbi Yehuda Mashmuel, Halacha ki Rabban Gamliel. The halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel, and this woman is believed in this instance. Ve'amar le Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, the Rav Yehuda. Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda says to Rav Yehuda, who was quoting this in the name of Shmuel, Shinina, which was the nickname for Rav Yehuda, either because he had large teeth, or Shinina means he was very sharp. Amart lan mishmei de Shmuel, halacha ki Rabban Gamliel afi rishona. When you told this over to us, you said that halacha is like Rabban Gamliel, even in the first case being our Mishnah over here, that halacha is like Rabban Gamliel. My af birishona. What does it mean, af birishona, here in the first Mishnah? Af gav di gada meimar uki mamona bechezkat marei. Over here, the chazaka of the mamon is with the husband. He's the one who's going to have to pay out the ktubah. So the husband is favored by the chazaka. And despite that fact, amar Rabban Gamliel in our Mishnah, bari odif. He says that Bari claim wins. The woman says she has a definitive claim. She says, I was only Niv'elet after the Erusin, and I was Ne'anasti. She makes a definitive claim. The husband says, lo. Now he says something that sounds definitive, but he can't. He says, no, it happened before. He has no evidence of that. He's making a Shema claim. And so here, Bari v'Shema, despite the fact that it's going up against the Chazaka that the Mamon resides with the husband, nevertheless, Bari wins. So the same thing over here. Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda are saying Chayav over here, because despite the fact that the debtor is in possession of the money, and the creditor is making a bari claim, he's making a shema claim, we allow the money to be moved. Because of this, exactly this psak of Shmuel says bari wins even against the chazaka. So therefore, what he is saying is the derivation of Rav Huna and Rav Yehuda's shita comes from this psak aloch of Shmuel, the aloch is like Rabban Gamliel in our Mishnah. So Gemara says, well, lema Rav Yehuda, Rav Huna, da amrik Rabbi Gamliel. Let us say here that Rav Yehuda and Rav Huna subscribe to the position of Rabbi Gamliel. Rav Nachman, Rabbi Yochanan, Damrik, Rabbi Yoshua. And Rav Nachman, Rabbi Yochanan hold like Rabbi Yoshua. Meaning that we'll line up their position with the Tanaim based on this. So Amar Lecha Rav Nachman. Over here you see only Rav Nachman answering because it's not true for Rabbi Yochanan. That's what I mentioned before. In tomorrow's daf we'll see that Rabbi Yochanan doesn't believe that this is true. So Amar Lecha Rav Nachman. Ana Damri, I feel like Rabbi Gamliel. I can even hold like Rabbi Gamliel. The only reason that Rabbi Gamliel believes that over here that she is believed in a menet is not just because of Bari. It has an additional factor here, which is a migo. Of Alhocha, in the case of the creditor and the debtor, there is no migo. So what Rav Nachman says is that Rabbi Gamliel's shito is premised on two things. Yes, there's a chazaka that the money resides with the husband. Against that, we have a Bari and a Shema. The Bari of the woman, the Shema of the husband, but that itself would not be enough. The additional factor is that there's amigo over here. Amigo is that the woman had a better claim. She could have said, instead of saying that, be'emet nivalti, I had bi'ah, but I was ne'anasti, I was raped, and it happened after we were married, or after we had erusin. She could say, mukateitzeni. She could just say that I lost my bitulim by some accident, some freak of nature that it caused me to lose my bitulim. So if that's the case, she had a better taina and she doesn't take it up, she should be believed. Because if she wanted to lie, she had a better lie over here. So when she tells us this, we got to assume she's telling the truth. So I put that migo together with the bari. That's what makes the bari strong enough here to overcome the shema and the chazaka and allow her to collect, in this case, her ktubah. On the other hand, in our case of the debtor and the creditor is saying, you lent me the money. The debtor is saying, I don't know. So over there, there's no migo. There's only a bari and shema. Maybe Rabban Gamliel would agree that that's the case, that you're patur in that case. Because bar is not enough by itself to overcome the chazaka of the money being in the possession of the debtor. Now the reason this is only Rav Nachman's shita is because Rav Nachman is saying now that this Mishnah is a migal, and the upcoming Mishnah that we're going to see in tomorrow's daf is a migal. He's going to say that the upcoming Mishnah, which says she claims she's a mukat eitz, says there that's a migal as well, because mukat eitz can have two claims. I'm a mukat eitz before we got married, or I'm a mukat eitz after erusin. That Mishnah just says mukat eitz. So she had a better claim to say I was a mukat eitz after we had erusin. The fact that she doesn't make that claim means there's a migal there as well. Rabbi Yochanan does not agree with that. He says Rabbi Yochanan thinks that this Mishnah that we just read has a migal, but the upcoming Mishnah does not have a migo in it. And therefore, for Rabbi Yochanan, it's clear that he believes that Rabban Gamliel's Shita is premised on Bari and Shema, and not on the migo. Inami. Adgan lo kama Rabban Gamliel hatam elo darminin ukma chazaka. Because there's an extra chazaka over here. Of a hocha, my chazaka itle. By the case of the woman, you have an offsetting chazaka. You have the money in the possession of the husband, that's one chazaka. The woman has a status of being a ksheira. And a bitula, that's her chazaka. From the time that she's born, that's her chazaka. So those two chazakot offset each other. Now we're just left with Bari and Shema. That's why we allow for her to collect our nektubah. In the case of the creditor and their debtor, there's nothing to offset the chazaka that the money's in the possession of the debtor. In that case, Bari is not enough. What do we do to offset that chazaka? And maybe Rav Gamliel would agree that in that case, he is patur. Hakanami mistavra, it makes a lot of sense what we're saying now. The kamashanina, the Rav Nachman, who, the Amark Rav Gamliel, the Rav Nachman can subscribe to this position of Rabbi Gamliel, dim gain, because if you don't say this, kasha hilchata hilchata, you don't say this, then we're going to have a problem with the way that we give the psak halacha. The kaimelon, hilchata Rav Nachman medine. We hold like Rav Nachman when it comes to dine mimononot. Rav Nachman was a dayan, and he has a tremendous amount of clout in terms of psiske halacha with regards to dinim. And over here, this case of the creditor and the debtor, we're going to say the halacha is like Rav Nachman that says patur. Ubaha amar Rav Yehuda Mashmol, but we have Rav Yehuda Mashmol saying Alocha ki Rabban Gamliel, that she is ne'emenet. How do I reconcile between the Mishnah and Rav Nachman's position? Alav Shmaminoa kidim Shmaminina. It must be the way that we reconciled here, that Rav Nachman is pointing out that Rav Gamliel has an extra thing on his side in the case of our Mishnah, either a Migo or a Chazaka, that helps to bolster the Bari, and that's why the Bari overcomes the Shema. But in other cases, we would not say that. In a normal case of Bari and Shema, we would not come to that conclusion. Now, Tosafot over here, and many of the other Rishonim, deal with how far does this concept of Bari v'Shema go? Do we really say Bari always trumps a Shema? Tosafot comes up here with something called a Bari Tov and a Shema Garua, or a Bari Garua and a Shema Tov. Yeah, there's sometimes where the claim of Shema is good because there's no way he should have known the information. So that claim of Shema is not to his detriment. Other times he should have known the information, therefore the Shema is a negative. The other case, again, Bari, there's a good Bari where there's a likelihood that he knows the information that Tanad Bari is a strong Tanad Bari. In other cases, maybe he's speculating and he's making a Bari claim, but that's not a Bari Tov. So Tosafot, in order to reconcile Shito throughout Shas of the Amoraim, comes up with these different gradations of Bari and Shema to explain why sometimes we say Bari trumps Shema, and sometimes we do not say that Bari trumps Shema. Now over here in our Gemara, we have two Lishonot. One that says that the reason Rabbi Gamliel allows the woman to be believed is because of Migo, the other one because of Chazaka. Now, many of the Rishonim don't like this Girsa, even though Rashi kept the Girsa in, many of them don't like that Girsa because of the fact that Migo can only be used to be poter, to relieve someone of having to pay money. It should not grant the person the ability to collect money. And over here, it's granting the woman the right to collect her ketubah. And therefore, we don't see a Migo that is placed in there. Now, some bring this as a proof that Migo can be used to collect money, because here you see it is used to collect money. I think the Meiri mentions over here, the Migo doesn't stand alone. It's only because the Migo is together with the Bari that we allow you to collect money. But normally a Migo standing alone would allow you to collect money like the woman is over here. So you can't prove anything about Migo over here because the Migo is mitzareif to the Bari. But a normal Migo wouldn't allow that, and therefore they can't have the Girsa here without undermining their positions with regards to Migo. Okay, we're going to stop over here by the Mishnah on the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph.